my arm with toon kings and men of Britonia. So let's set the tone, listening to the one and only. We've got to that old world charm.
Hey. Gentlemen, welcome to this episode 10 of Old World Charm. I secretly paused and deleted the previous recording and started it again because the intro was weird and these two gentlemen were being even weirder. So just a full bamboozle, I deleted and started over secretly. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us. My name's Adam Cavalier. That's Danny, the sweetest of meats, McDevitt, and Peter the Falcon. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello, Adam.
Hey. This was way less weird. I'm just going to say, way less weird than what you said before.
They will never know what I said before. They will never know. By the tricks and the trade, it will remain secret. It's like our second episode.
Was it the Epstein stuff? Was it because I started talking about Epstein again?
It was. You did it again, Danny. Sorry, not Danny. The other one. Did it
be- Oops.
The other one. there must always be a one of us and the other one. There is a Danny and the other one this episode. Next episode, there'll be a Peter and the other one. Join us for episode 11. It's going to be great. but it's funny that I'm calling this episode 10, and we are somewhat celebrating the fact that, you know, this episode, we've been going for 2.5 months, and this episode's mostly going to be on our reflections of the game, where it's at, you know, 10 episodes in, give or take, you know, just under 3 months of the old world in, you know, alive again, back in existence in the community. And we're talking about what we've learned so far, our impressions, some of the good and bad lists we have written, what we like and don't like about them, the good and bad archetypes we're starting to see, the problems facing the community, and the top three things that we have learned, or our hibbity hot takes, as we would have them. But gentlemen, how are we doing? What's new in the worlds of Peter the Falcon? How are you feeling, brother? I know you were a bit under the weather last week.
Oh, I'm still terribly under the weather, but you know, I'm making do. I'm getting by, living my best life.
Still charming, you know.
Yeah.
Let's be thankful for. What about you, Danny? Plain. How you doing?
I'm jealous of Peter's composure right now, to be honest with you. Like, how does he manage to be charming and sick at the same time? I am none of those things.
Sorry, Pete. Were you about to talk about you playing a game soon or something? Or
yeah, I've been playing some Old World. And the reason why I'm really able to hold my composure is because, you know, I'm a single father of three. So, like, nothing gets me angry anymore. I have no emotions.
You're dead on the inside?
Dead on the inside and on the outside. If you look at me, you're just like,
whoa. Yeah, fair.
What is Marge yell at home? What does Marge yell at home when he says that? Like, he says he's afraid of nothing and, like, nothing bothers him. And she yells something and he freaks, like, where? Ah! He runs out of the room. Anyway.
Probably aneurysms.
It's definitely aneurysm. That is my life right now. Is just so my nieces and nephews are currently, like, my older brother is taking them through, like, the greatest of The Simpsons, which is essentially was my childhood. And so all my interactions with them, which is Sunday, so I'd had family day hanging around, all interactions was just Simpsons quotes bouncing off each other. Like, yeah. My nephew had a bruise on his leg. And I'm like, the mark. We just, like, played out two scenes of the Stonecutters episode. We're like, attach the stone of triumph. And we just, like, threw pebbles at him. It was great. Anyway, we got a thing to record. It's going to be, there's some stuff in it. We're probably going to say some words. I don't know. You might like it. You might not. You probably will. If you're listening to it this far, if you literally made it the 3 minutes and 50 seconds in, you're already committed, baby. You ain't going anywhere. Let's do it. This is a 2-part podcast. The first part is what you see is what you get. You will be hearing us talk about our thoughts on the game. But part two is a very special request by our patrons, and it's available to our patrons only over on That Old World Charm over on Patreon. Please join us there. I must have reamed off another show and I would have been absolutely crucified, and you would have been right to do so. But you come and jump over there. We're going to be doing list writing fundamentals as a request of one of our patrons. And we're going to be talking through how to write a good list, how to get the most out of your core and or core tacks, writing archetypes and or identifying your faction identities and making the most of them. In addition to getting some crunchy stuff like how do you write a list for XYZ matter? How do you write a list for XYZ identity, et cetera, and mission pack? So on and so forth. Please join us over there. But gentlemen, Danny. time for some hot takes. Time for us to say some nonsense that, you know, if you know, Falcon permitting, will not get us canceled. Fingers crossed.
Look, you know, I'm always ready to give some hot takes, Adam.
Well, I started with you.
Yeah. So we're 10 episodes in, which is crazy. I can't believe we've been doing this for 10 episodes. It feels like no time at all.
So if the fabled second episode occurred,
yeah,
we are 10 episodes
in. It did.
Definitely did.
It's important that we establish that lore early and often. I'm really excited that I was telling these guys just the other day, right? That like it's awesome to get to talk to them about Warhammer like all the time. Because I love to talk about Warhammer. And since these guys are spread across various areas of the globe, almost one of them is online at any one given time. So
it's pretty good. It's pretty good. We do have the right spread.
I don't know. I'm loving recording that. I'm loving playing the game. Like the movement phase still feels like a beautiful game to me, which I really like. So one of my favorite parts about Warhammer Fantasy.
Except for the debate on how does wheeling actually occur. We retract our apology, by the way. We said we got wheeling wrong because we thought someone had definitively figured out what wheeling is and how it actually 100% works. That's just nonsense. No one knows what wheeling is. It's a myth. It doesn't happen. It's the literal unicorn of the old world. Just everyone just does it, but no one knows how it truly works. It's ethereal. It's just floating in the ether. So we retract any statements of wrongdoing.
Okay.
Almost certainly our take was wrong, but it's funnier this way. Peter, give us your takes on how you're feeling about the game at the moment.
How do I feel about the game? I like it. I like, I don't know, 90% of it. There are things I don't like, but they're little things. I don't like magic still. I think that it's better than I originally thought it was, but I still don't love it. I don't like some of the charge scenarios you can get yourself into because they don't feel good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I love the movement phase. I love the back and forth in it. I love like trying to plan out how combats are going to go so I can set up all my other units to take advantage of the follow-up turns.
Yep.
I love the chaos of the game sometimes where, you know, just awful, awful things happen and they cascade into worse things.
Yeah, no kidding.
I love all of it. It's just great. So,
yeah, that is one of my hot takes is realizing that this, more than any version of a rank and flank game I've played, has the propensity to go from oh that is bad to wow the game is over, like quicker than most. And that is, I just think the newness. I've seen, I think, two games just like ended over off a single panic test. Just like just a cascade of absolute failure of someone's dice wrist. Mm-hmm. They're just like, I'm just like pathetic wrist. Disgusting.
So Peter and I tried to play a game like just a couple of days ago. And I had a unit of hobgoblins. I was playing Chaos Stars. I had a unit of hobgoblins flee through my Infernal Guard with my Sorcerer Prophet and my Battle Standard Bearer. And they had the banner of the Overseer, so they weren't levies anymore. So I still had to take a panic test.
Oh, no.
That's a rerollable 9, right? Or 10, right? Like, that's no big deal. I got that, no problem. So I rolled an 11. All right, that sucks.
Yep.
Reroll. Nope, I got an 11 too. And so they fled back through the hobgoblins.
and
off the table.
Yep. That is a straight up DJ Khaled you played yourself.
Not just that.
You made them not levies and bada bing, bada boom, backfire.
Hilarious. Because of that, everything in that corner ran off the board in the following turn.
Yep.
Well, I was going to say, well, that was still leadership 10 and that happened. I was going to say, because I believe for the most part, leadership's lower. Like generally, leadership is lower most times. I think elves still,
right.
elves and dwarves are still 10, which is,
tens. Yeah.
Like, you know, half of the armies when you think about it, but it feels worse. So.
Yeah. So definitely, I think there's a propensity here is one of my hot takes from, I think there's a lot more, I think we all got very lazy, especially in 8th edition, like panic test, fear test, I'm not going to sully my hands with such a leadership 10 re-rollable nonsense. Sure. And we just didn't care, didn't bother because they never came up. Except like you always heard that one mythological time it happened, you know, on the other side of the world or whatever. But for the most part, it just wasn't a thing. And so now it being a thing is a big change, huge change that you have to respect all these things. You really have to distance out a lot of stuff. I constantly am asking, and this is hilarious because every single time I've played an opponent, I've asked them, and do you have a way to just cause a panic? Can you just like, do you have a spell to cause a panic? Do you use like, oh, I hit you with this bow of bullshit panic caused. There should be definitely a bow of bullshit. for wood elves. What is it called? Is it Kernos bow?
No, it's just Wailing Arrow. It's a one use.
Cool. It's now henceforth known as the bow of bullshit. Feel free to bleep if you need to there, Skink Priest Dicky. We just need to play tighter. And I think that's absolutely cool, absolutely good. Because 10th edition was very cavalier as far as rank and flank games go. I'm leadership 10, fearless, stubborn, got more ranks than God, and I don't give a shit what you do. And now we are into much more of a medium-sized unit or MSU style game, and we need to be more respectful of these of the mechanics now because they actually exist. Danny, one thing that you are absolutely freaking loving.
One thing that I'm loving is having hammer units with big unit strength values.
Give me an example.
Like, okay. I've been taking a unit of 20 witch elves with the death hag. And so usually by the time I get to the enemy, I've lost like, you know, a few, like three or like maybe like two or three, right? So I'm like, I've got like 18 of them. And then they just dice the enemy down to like, so that they're below, so that I'm like more than double what they are.
Yep.
And so instead of just like falling back in good order, they're actually breaking and then having other littler units around that have like charged them, like harpies and stuff like that, that can actually run them down pretty easily.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's been good.
Love it. That's cool. And so that's just predicated on the fact that like witch elves are actually not good in a grind, legitimately. Like, they really do not. Like, what are they? They got a award save still?
No.
Yeah, they don't. Grinding is the worst thing imaginable. You got to go in and kill the front rank every time. Otherwise, you will get annihilated.
Right.
It's literally clan rats. Literally clan rats just rabid off their guts. Pete, what's one thing you're loving?
I'm really loving shock cavalry. It's just something I've always enjoyed, and they're really good in this edition. So, elite shock cavalry is like my jam. I'm trying to slam them into every list again.
So, what do you mean by that? Give us some unit examples. Do you mean like the Uber cavalry, like the Chosen Knights, the Blood Guard, or do you? The Blood Knights, or do you mean like the medium level stuff as well, like, you know, Bretonian Lances and whatnot? But
Bretonian Lances are garbage. Get out of here.
Oh, yeah, you are.
Awful.
The hot takes. We're getting the hot takes now. Let's go.
Unless they're on Pegasus's eye, get out of here. Pegasoe. Wild Riders, Chosen Chaos Knights are awesome. Inner Circle Knights for Empire, Demigryphs, also Empire. Even Boar Boys for Orcs. I just love them. Mm. It's something that they have that like one turn where they're going to smack you. They have a first charge, so I'm ignoring your rank. So they actually hit units that normally they would get bogged down in pretty good as long as you're prepared for the comeuppance if you fail. And they just go fast, and I like going fast, man.
I do think this edition has gotten cavalry the most right of any edition I've ever played of a rank and flank. Like, cavalry feel like cavalry on the battlefield. Like, you always used to see the, you know, growing up watching Braveheart and many other historical, yet the opposite of historical. Exactly correct. Films where you just like, you see a cavalry charge and you're like, as your little boy, you're just like, yes, that's so cool. The ride of the Rohirrim, man. Like, yeah. All these things, these epic cavalry things from my childhood and all books I've read and things. And I think this is the old world has it pretty perfect. And you're right, is cleared off counter charge and first charge. I think first charge is one of the best new rules for this edition. And that's one of my hot takes. Any others, Danny? You got another hot take for us? Oh, sorry, we're talking about things we love. Whatever.
Yeah, no, dude, there's lots of stuff I love. The other thing that I've really been loving, I've really been loving like cheap, fast units. They've been like game winning so many times for me. It's like a constant threat to like engage wizards and or like charge fleeing units when they run from other units. Like it's a huge amount of versatility, and I'm really glad that I get stuff like Harpies and Dark Riders in my army that can be like super fast skirmishing units with Swift Stride.
Sick. Petey, one more.
Basic bitch monsters. I love that they're viable now. Like they're not like a guaranteed, you know, I'm giving my opponent 200 points by putting this on the board. I like that. I love that I can field a Chaos Giant or something like that in a list and not feel like I made the worst decision imaginable.
Okay.
Like a Manga Squig, right?
Oh, no, that's terrible.
Peter, are you on Team Giant? Because this week, after like doing some reading again and like really thinking about stuff, I'm like, I really like Giants.
I'm not sure I'm on Team Regular Giant still. But I like the Chaos Giant. I think it's pretty sweet.
He's pretty cool.
He's pretty cool.
For 30 extra points, that adds a lot.
Yeah.
5-up armor and 6-up regen is real nice.
That's a lot. Yeah.
And, you know, like there might be more stuff coming that is giantish that will make things even better. Like, but I'm not even opposed if you run a regular giant. You know, there's only a couple of armies that really are just going to shoot it out of the sky or shoot it down. And that's something you're shooting when you're not shooting the rest of my army. So I'm not technically opposed to it anyway. I just like monsters in general right now. Yeah. As long as there's not a character on top of them, those I don't like as much.
It really feels like, so well, we'll go into the stuff we're hating in a moment, but the thing I think I'm loving the most is list construction. So many of the other games that I play, list construction has fallen absolutely out the ass. The joy of sitting there like you're watching a 2-hour movie and working on a list, trying to get the next, just to get it to fit right, just so it feels right, and or squeeze 5% more out of this character or this unit, or putting so most recent thing I've been doing is slapping obsidian lodestones on any unit I actually care about. Because I found that there are just too many spells in the game to shut down units. And I am playing Ogres, so usually my armies have like 2 to 3 relevant combat units. And then if one of them is just taken out of the game due to a Crystal Column or the Miasma or the whatever, you're like, wow, okay, that's just bad. And so just sitting there for like half an hour, just getting that version together and seeing what I've lost to get those in there, what it's cost me, what it's gaining me, et cetera, that is just so much joy to my life. I can't explain it to you. Like the list writing in 8th edition and in the little bit of WAP that I played was such a joy, and I missed it so much from all the other games that I play. It's been like so stripped back and so maligned. It's really sad. But man, oh man, I'm wasting so much of my life trying to like get like another unit in my army or the right amount of chaff. Or it's so good. I love it. Anyway, Danny, something you were hating or disliking?
I think I am not liking very much the 6th illusion spell, Mystifying Miasma. I think it's probably too much, especially when, especially when you can lock somebody down, and wizards are not fast to like kind of be able to respond to that. So I just think it's not fair for like a 200 point unit to just completely take out a way more expensive unit for the entire game for no real cost.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it should be. So if you were to change it, what would you change it to? Or would you delete it? Because you're a man with no chill.
I'd probably do something like give them like a 1d6 to charge or something like that instead of 2d6, or like make it so that it's a prohibited charge penalty, but still let them do it. Like I think that it's unreasonable for them to be stuck 2 inches away from the enemy the whole game and not able to do anything about it.
Yeah, that's fair. I 100% echo that. I would like to see it just like a negative to move and you can't march and negative to charge. That would be totally, totally acceptable. The you can't charge. Whoa. So I played a game against a renowned square-based gentleman, Val Heffelfinger.
And whoa, he had let's not call him a gentleman.
Yeah, okay. Miscreant. ruffian.
There you go.
And... and yeah, he just literally kept that spell on my unit of five freaking Mournfang for three turns of the game until he got a Wyvern Warboss into their flank, which I couldn't do anything about because I couldn't march to face him. And it was like, okay, I give you a rear or I give you a flank. And I'm like, if I give you a flank, I might, and I stick, I'm going to countercharge you. And yeah, no, it was real bad. It was real freaking bad. And what was really bad was that was the game. That cost me the game pretty much. But anyway. Peter, something you hate or something you dislike?
I just don't like how kind of the opposite of this. I don't like how unkillable some of the big monsters are right now when it comes to putting a character on them. I feel like
also fair.
There's not a lot of answers to them. And we're seeing that in the minimal, you know, RTT and those single GT results we're getting, where most of the better lists are running at least one big dude on either a dragon or a wyvern as their like linchpin unit. And yeah, it's not fun, particularly in my opinion, for people of like a middling or lower, say like competitive streak in their bones. Because like as someone who's played a lot of fantasy in different editions, yes, I can think of a whole bunch of different ways to deal with a scary, unkillable dragon. It doesn't mean it's always going to work for me, but at least it's a challenge. I know a lot of people that have no answer and it's just going to be deflating when they get hit by something like that. Right.
Yeah.
And there's just not enough answers, not enough things to keep them off. There's a couple of weapons in the game, and there's Miasmic Mirage, which, like you guys have just noted, doesn't feel good to be on the receiving end of. But it's like one of the few solutions to that problem.
True. Yes, you're absolutely correct. It totally is. My take on that is that if I had to say that, you know, 8th edition 40K, so, oh, geez. The forbidden word. 8th edition fantasy was identified by its Death Stars. That's what this edition's version is right now. Right now, the Death Star is the Uber character on Flying Gribbly and or Stonehorn. You know, it's just the I am an unkillable stat check that you cannot negotiate. Good news is it costs you, you know, in the region of a quarter of your army. So that is the only upside. If these things with, you know, how much is a Wyvern Boss? A Wyvern Boss is sub 500. Yeah.
Yeah, they're like 350.
Yeah,
they're quite cheap. But the Wyvern is nowhere near as potent as the Dragon. But that's exactly correct. You're paying for the mobility and the extra durability rather than the damage output, because the Warboss is the damage output. But you know what I mean? Like they are that equivalent for this edition as it sits right now. Unless anything changes, that will be one of the core identities of the old world moving forward. And our ability to manage them, you know, solve them, kill them, remove them, marginalize them, and or if we have to comp them. Or you know, debuff them so they're not a takeable or incentivized option, so to speak. I mean, it could be that we have to do something like we say, okay, cool, you can be mounted on whatever gribbly you want, but you only get one magic item if you do so. That's it. You don't get anything else. You don't have a crazy combo, or you can't have three saves. You can either roll any two saves that you like. If you've got a great armor save and a great ward save, you can use those two, but you don't get a regen. Or you can have the ward save and the regen, but you don't get an armor save. And if I ignore any of those, you only get one save. So stuff like that might be a way we need to go if they do become just an overwhelming identity we can't avoid and we can't solve internally. But I think that's still, you know, a couple of months away. We've only just started getting some results from some events, which we're going to talk to in a minute. But Danny, what's something that you hate?
One of the other things that I don't like, I am having a hard time fitting like offensive infantry into my list, but I'm still working that. Like I've been fielding the Witch Elves and those have been successful for me, but I've only got like the one unit. Like if I wanted to take an offensive like infantry list. I just don't think I can like swing with the like the super cavalry units and stuff like that in the game. So I feel like I'd be at a huge disadvantage. Mm-hmm. So because of that, like some armies feel really boring to me. Like I don't think I could play dwarves right now because of that.
Yeah, fair. Anything to speak to that, Pete?
No, I think he's dead on, at least in that regard. Dwarves is an army that I've been like looking at a lot.
Me too. Yeah.
I've never liked the dwarf playstyle, but I always feel like when I see an army that a lot of people are complaining about, I want to see if I can make it work. I think there's things you can do in it, but they're not exciting things. Dwarves are probably like one of the main armies that Linehammer works with. You know, you take 20 or 30 rangers or more in a line, scout them out, give them great weapons and bows, and yeah. then put a character in them with a 2+ invulnerable, like a repeatable, because they can take that one rune that you can take multiple times. Like there's definitely ways to counter it for sure, but that's like one of the boring ways I think to play dwarves, and you'll have some success. Offensive infantry is really hard to field. Even like with wood elves, which is something I've been trying to play just to get used to a different style over my lizardmen that's not totally different. I've started trying to put in, you know, like 5 and 10 man units of war dancers, and they're cool. But I feel like they're lackluster compared to just taking more bows or, taking more wild riders or something like that instead.
Well, the thing that I'm hating the most is the pointlessness of the non-level 4 magic user. Level 3, a little less so, but level 1, level 2 just seems pointless to me, and it bothers me. It bothers me that because of infinite dispels, and infinite dispels are a thing. Yeah, I'm not crazy.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like I would like wizards to have as many dispels as they've got wizard levels again. So that if I'm playing a level 2 and a level 4, there is a point for me having the level 2. And right now, if I was to take 3 level 2s and you take a level 4, that one level 4 nullifies every single level 2 in range. And it's not even close. And that feels bad. Like the light council-esque things we used to see, those are more than pointless if you can't stay outside the spell range. And in fact, I think I just level 2 right now is prohibitively bad. And I think if I wasn't going to take a level 4, I'm not taking a magic user. And that feels bad too. So I would really like a point to level 2s and non-level 4 wizards. I can see a reason for a level 3, and I'm pretty much exclusively talking about the special character prophetess, because she's legitimately good. She's a legitimately good level 3 because she brings a bunch of other unique jank and awesomeness. Yeah. But apart from that, like level 4s just seems so much better than any other caster. Like so much better. It's a little bit too much. What do you guys think?
I mean, I can't really disagree with any of that, Adam. The increase in dispel range alone is big enough.
Yeah.
I think when you think about what you have to roll, like the level 4 versus the level 2, basically you have to beat whatever they roll by 1, like if you think about it, because they're kind of like 2 behind, like level 2 compared to level 4. And it's tough to do that. Like it's not going to happen very often where you're going to get spells off, and that feels really bad. So yeah, I would like a limited number of dispels. I even think 4 dispels is a lot.
I think so too. But that's what I think is fair with the rules that they've written for the game now. You get 4 casts, you get 4 dispels. So but yeah, even then it feels like a lot. Like you could take what? You'd have to take 3 level 2s at that level to overpower level 4. Like
waste them, and they'd have to be successful too.
Yeah, exactly right. That cast. You have to take 6 spells that cast. Your 5th spell maybe gets past level 4 if they've all successfully cast. Like it's a bit rough, man. Pete, have you found that as well?
Yeah, I feel like your level 2s, if you're taking them, you're taking them as attacks for some other reason. And then they might have some kind of success if you're being really janky about your movement and you're keeping them off to the side. But even then, most spells that are like that you're going to be casting or cast on an 8 or a 9. So you've got a 50-50 shot of casting it with a level 2 regardless.
Yeah.
Even if you are outside of a level 4's dispel range. So for me, like a level 1 or a 2, if you're taking that, it's because you really have like an amazing arcane item you want to drop. That's like a single use that you don't have the space for on your main level 4. Mm. Or, you know, you're doing some jank like Tzeentch where you're going to be effectively a level 4 anyway, yeah. Or vampire counts, same idea. Or you're Lizardman and you're trying to do like that double Engine of the Gods scenario, and you also want an arcane vassal regardless for your slan. Like those are reasons to take a level 1 or a 2. But anybody that's just taking, I think like having played enough now, I don't think you can be viable right now without taking a level, at least a level 3, if not a level 4, because of the way the game is swinging. I don't think it's going to work out for you very well. And then armies that can take 2 level 4s for like decently cheap, like Orcs and Goblins, they feel like even harder to deal with because of that, because now they've got 2 easy ways to stay out of dispel range with at least one guy. So
correct.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Feels bad, man. All right. If you had to pick the best current archetype, the best like a list identity, you know, MSU, MMU, Horde, or any of those in between and or additional, what would you say is the one that you would be, this is the way to go?
I don't know, man. Like I'm running a lot of MSU. Like that's kind of what I've been doing. It's been working for me. MSU with like a big caster or a big monster. And that seems to be what I'm seeing is getting results most places, at least for like the little bit of stuff we have. That said, you know, there are a few Horde lists. Tomb Kings have been doing really well with Hordes, and Night Goblin Hordes are both like extremely good right now. So it might be that MSU just isn't the way to go because those two armies counter it so well.
Fair. What about yourself, Danny? Any insights? I suppose I should have changed this question to be like, what archetypes do we know are doing well rather than which one's the best? Because I think 100% it's too early to say.
Yeah, I think armies that focus on points denial are going to be the best armies in the game.
Yeah.
So like if you can, like Orcs and Goblins are good because they have, not only can you store points efficiently, like way back deep in your lines where it's unlikely that they're going to get points out of them, but like the stuff that they throw forward is cheap and efficient. So like it either gets you into the right place for very cheaply. It holds you up. Like with Snotlings are unbelievably good. and like can just hold you up for turns while you try and hack through all their wounds. And then while they blast you with magic or keep the units that they don't want to be fighting away from their army. And then they're fighting you with the units that they can. So like, or you're getting hit in the face with fanatics. So yeah, I think that's why that army's good. Or like Double Dragon, for instance, with High Elves is really good. Because it stores 1,000 points into huge dragons.
Yeah. I do like the concept you just brought up there, storing points, like how to bank points. And that's not, you know, banking points out of your opponent's army. That's banking points in your own army. Points that the opposition is unlikely to get or very hard for them to achieve.
Right.
That might be something we talk to on part two. So, all right. Biggest issues facing the community moving forward, Peter.
Stop being dicks.
Yeah, you summed it up. All right, moving on.
Did something else happen?
No, it's just like I love our community. And like I've said in a lot of places, like I got into Warhammer Fantasy because of the community that I ended up joining here and how awesome they were and how like familial it was. But man, the online version of the community is just like I've never seen. Well, that's not true. This seems to just be a thing with certain communities. And I think 40K was like this for a while and they kind of got it beaten out of them. But like there's so much just like weird anger over like over anything that's not the way somebody sees it, right? Like it's a very grognard way of looking at things. The weird rules arguments we still see where people quote the rules text and they're just like, nope, that's not how I see it, so I'm doing it my way. It's all very confrontational. There's not a lot of like open discussion. There's been definitely a lot of things I've seen people post where I've questioned responding. Not in our group, but like in other Discords and stuff. So I'll see a question and I'll be like, well, I know the answer to that. I don't know if I want to answer it because I feel like they're just going to be really mad at me.
Of like the way they ask the question.
Just the way they ask the question and the way people have been. And it affects people that I know that I think are good people too. Like I can't, the amount of questions I see where people are like, well, based on this reading of this, I feel like you should be able to just live forever. And my tree man is invincible as long as I stand him in this way. And I just have to be like, okay, well, like, I guess I see what you're saying, but that's real bad and I don't like it. And I doubt that that was intended. And I know that there's always that argument, but what do you mean? What do they intend? But shut up. Because I promise you, because of the little insight I have into how they FAQ things, like there is a point where you will ask a question, be like, well, technically the way you wrote it is this. They will never FAQ that thing because their response is going to be when you write them that question, like, you're an idiot. Unfortunately. Anyway, that's my little rant.
Oh.
I totally agree. And I think everyone needs to just take a step back from asserting that they are correct in all ways, in all things, and just start posing things as questions. Hey guys, I read it like this. What do you guys think? Or stop going out looking for fights. I see so many people just asking things defensively, like asking questions defensively, as in like, I am going to arc up if you do not agree with me. I am going to give you hell and I'm going to possibly personally attack you if you do not agree with 100% of my whatever the take of all time I just produced. And I just think we all need to chill. Everyone just calm down. There's like, I think you just take right and wrong off the table for now. I just think you accept mistakes happen and just be willing to learn from them and everything's going to be okay. Yeah. But I do agree with Peter. I'm seeing a lot more than I would like of that kind of stuff. Danny, issues facing the community moving forward.
What do I think are going to be issues facing the community?
What's one you can think of?
Yeah. You know, Peter brings up a really good point about just being a better community, right? I wish that that were going to be the case. I think an accepted kind of universal tournament format is something I really wish that that'll be a problem moving forward. I think because there's not really any kind of composition to the game and the game really needs composition. I still feel that way even after playing games. Like I can't imagine trying to play against like 10 individual dragon ogres or some shit. Like that sounds horrible. And so like, us all coming to the same place with that is going to be, I think, a long journey. I'm glad it seems like most people have looked at Rule of Three as being kind of like the way that things should be. So at least there's some kind of baseline there. And so I hope it's not wildly different depending on where you're playing the game, because it's hard to have universal conversations about what's good if we're all playing like a game that has different rules.
Yeah, I think that's a fair take as well. My one is much the same. I'm going to echo Danny on top of that as well, and not have any opinions of my own, just build off others as I do. But I agree. I totally agree. If the game is ripe for the identity of that effing guy, you know, that guy, to like live hard, ride hard, ride free, and just do all sorts of prohibitive nonsense that wouldn't be accepted in many other places. And it's not that I'm going to even sit here and demonize that person for playing the game that they love in a way that they enjoy. If someone admits they're doing it just to be like a dirtbag, give them hell. They should feel bad and you should not feel bad about making them feel bad. But if that is genuinely a way that they want to play the game and the rules allow them to do so, we should be accepting of that to the extent that is, you know, as long as the rules allow it. And should we decide that we have to comp the game to make, you know, 10 single dragon ogres not a thing because it is something that is prevalent and causing people to have too many bad interactions? 100% for the betterment of the game, we should feel empowered to make that decision. But yeah, right now there are so many ripe for abuses, and you know, the gyrocopters, the dragon ogres, the line hammer, and in all honesty, the dragons and the dragon-esque things might become that too. But we'll have to wait and see on that, because I do believe there are meta adjustments that people can make in the game to mitigate those things. I think Mirage and like Crystal, you know, just the illusion magic tree is the best way we have at the moment, even though I want it nerfed and destroyed, scattered on the wind in ashes. What it's done to me personally, I still think it is a very good tool that we have, and there's probably some others we have yet to uncover. All right. What's the biggest thing you've learned about playing the game, Peter? Like, what's one big thing Peter has learned? Peter might be dead.
I think Peter's dead.
Danny, right. Welcome to a two-man show. Okay. Big thing you've learned playing the game.
Man. There have been so many things that I've learned, Adam, almost always to my detriment in this game.
Yeah.
You know, okay, so the first thing that was like kind of really mind-blowing to me was the realization that like these monstrous cavalry-like characters were skirmishers.
Yes.
Like, and the movement that you can do with that stuff, like those characters are so phenomenal. And I'm really glad I have the option to take some in my army.
Hell yeah. That's a good take. Peter, are you back? Are you undead?
Are you alive now?
I just happened to be on mute, which is a great way to have a conversation.
Damn fine way. Professional mm-hmm. outfit. Yeah.
As someone who's been on a lot of podcasts, it's not the first or the last time I'll do that. So what have I learned? Nothing. I knew everything coming into this that nice. I needed to know. I'm essentially perfect. I've learned that in retrospect, I should read the entire rule and not the first and last line of every one. That has been very helpful to me. I have learned that like my style of play has definitely switched to even more MSU than it was in previous editions, and that MSU works, which is always great. I've moved away from ranks almost exclusively with every army I play. Not to say that they don't work for some armies, but none of the ones that I have seem to want to use them. So that's been a learning experience. And yeah.
Fair. Good stuff.
Do you like that move away from ranks, Peter, or does that bug you?
It depends on the army. It bugs me for Lizardmen, as I do miss, like, running ranks of Saurus and stuff in 8th edition sucked because of Purple Sun, but you had ways to not have that happen to you. Yeah. So it was okay to field those units. Mm-hmm. I find in this version of the game, I don't want to, and that sucks. I really want to run, like, 20 Temple Guard, but even when I run 14 or 16, I feel like I'm handcuffing myself, even if they accomplish stuff, because it's like a huge point sink for like a slow moving initiative one unit. When I look at other armies, like Wood Elves that I've been playing a lot of now, I don't miss it as much. Warriors of Chaos, it sucked as a realization for running actual warriors.
Yeah.
Marauders, I still think work fine in a like at least a 20 man. But yeah, it's been a lot. I do miss running the hordes, but I don't want to run the armies that make hordes work. I guess is the thing.
What a contrarian you are.
Well, like right. I do like Night Goblins, but I don't know. Maybe I'll
do. You like Night Goblins or do you like Fanatics?
I like both. I do like Netters and being a jerk.
Netters are sick. Yeah, that's true. Man, they really slapped so much. Like, it really feels like Men at Arms and Night Goblins exist in a like a tier of their own when it comes to like ranked nonsense infantry. Like, they just have so many keywords and or jank abilities that just make them feel like so much more than the sum of just ranked idiots that so many other factions have access to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really impressive. Those two are the only two I can, there's probably more. There's probably others, but those two are the two I can think of that really stand like head and shoulders above the rest. Exiled, not like men at arms, even better? The yeoman men at arms or whatever they are they even
yeah.
better? Again? The yeoman guard are the ones that have like a million special rules.
They also are like their weapon skill 3 and their veterans.
Yes.
So
fantastic. Yeah,
they're awesome. They
yeah. I mean, state troops just like blanch, like jealous at men at arms.
Hey, veteran halberdiers are pretty good.
Yeah, they're
fine. Veterans are pretty solid because, I mean, the veteran special rule is just good regardless.
Yeah, exactly right. All right, gentlemen, on that note, we're actually gonna sign this one off. We're probably going to close with one closing piece of advice each for people who are possibly, you know, just getting started in the old world. People are going to be starting this great game, you know, nonstop for probably the next 12 months. We're probably going to have rolling people just coming into the game. So what is one piece of parting advice you would give somebody, you know, starting their first army or, you know, their first game?
My advice to somebody who is just starting would be to pick the models that you like the best for the army and like literally just build and paint the units you want. There's probably not a bad choice if you're good, if you practice with that unit enough. But like also do a little bit of research to see what is good so that you don't spend a lot of time on making like all bad choices, but it's okay to make some bad choices. That's what I'm telling you.
I do agree with that. At this early stage of the game and even later, man, like even when we get to like a semi-competitive meta, if that ends up being a thing that people, you know, want and are engaged in, like 8th edition was, like WAP was, if you take 2/3 good stuff, you can still have like, you know, 600 points of your identity, your flavor, and the things that give you joy, spark joy for you in that army. So enough of it to make it yours, which I think is really integral to rank and flank games more than any other game that I've played. Peter, parting piece of advice.
I mean, that's it, man. It's like, what drives you to play the game? Is it because your friends are playing the game? Is it because you're like a very competitive person and use that to kind of drive your choices? If it's because your friends are playing or it's because you think the models look cool, like all of the armies are cool. And if you wanted to, if you're listening to this right now and you're like, man, I really wish I understood how cool these guys were, like send me a message and I will tell you how cool your army is, like ad nauseum, because I love the lore of this game too. I've pulled a lot of people into Warhammer Fantasy by telling them stories about like Grimgor Ironhide or Gorok or just, you know, Golgugs, Maneaters and shit, because I just love all of it. You know, the CEO of Arrowhead Studios today on Twitter, who they made Helldivers 2, which is like the best new game ever since Baldur's Gate 3, which I guess is a very short timeline, but still wicked, wicked game. He was asking like what army should he play in Warhammer Fantasy the Old World, because their whole studio is playing it right now. And I was just like, man, that's so cool that these just like super cool dudes probably in Sweden or something are living their best lives playing the Old World. And that's how popular the game is getting already. Like drives me, I just love it.
That's awesome.
But just like pick the thing that looks the coolest to you, read a little bit about it, and then start painting models, man. Just do it.
We couldn't have said it better, gentlemen. And on that note, we're out of here. Come and join us over on part 2 at that Old World Charm on Patreon. And jump in our Discord, talk some crap with us, give us some listener questions as well. Like this great one we're going to be servicing over on part 2, list construction fundamentals, how to write a list for the Old World, where to get started, how to negotiate some of the pitfalls, how to pick some of the better choices, some of the fluffier choices, and how to balance it with what you want your identity and or your list to be, all that and more. Come and see us there. Gentlemen, say your good nights.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to that Old World Charm with those charming chaps, Adam, Danny, and Peter the Falcon. Thanks ever so much. Cheerio.